Unit 9, Text A. Aging in European countries. We have to realize how old, how very old we are. Nations are classified as aged when they have 7% or more of their people age 65 or above. And by about 1970, every one of the advanced countries had become like this. Of the really ancient societies, with over 13% above 65, all are in northwestern Europe. At the beginning of the 1980s, East Germany had 15.6%, Austria, Sweden, West Germany and France had 13.4% or and England and Wales 13.3%. Scotland had 12.3%. Northern Ireland 10.8% and the United States 9.9%. We know that we are getting even older, and that the nearer a society approximates to zero population growth, the older its population is likely to be, at least for any future that concerns us now. To these now familiar facts, a number of further facts may be added. Some of them only recently recognized. There is the apparent paradox that the effective cause of the high proportion of the old is births rather than deaths. There is the economic principle that the dependency ratio, the degree to which those who cannot earn depend for a living on those who can, is more advantageous in older societies like ours than in the younger societies of the developing world, because lots of dependent babies are more of a liability than numbers of the inactive aged. There is the appreciation of the salient historical truth that the aging of advanced societies has been a sudden change. If revolution is a rapid resettlement of the social structure, and if the age composition of the society counts as a very important aspect of that social structure, then there has been a social revolution in European, particularly Western European society, within the lifetime of everyone over 50. Taken together, these things have implications which are only beginning to be acknowledged. These facts and circumstances were well to the fore earlier this year at a world gathering about aging, as a challenge to science and to policy, held at Vichy in France. There is often resistance to the idea that it is because the birth rate fell earlier in Western and Northwestern Europe than elsewhere, rather than because of any change in the death rate, that we have grown so old. But this is what elementary demography makes clear. Long life is altering our society, of course, but in experiential terms. We have among us a very much greater experience of continued living than any society that has ever preceded us anywhere. and this will continue. But too much of that lengthened experience, even in the wealthy West, will be experience of poverty and neglect, unless we do something about it. If you are now in your 30s, you ought to be aware that you can expect to live nearly one-third of the rest of your life after the age of 60. The older you are now, of course, the greater this proportion will be, and greater still if you are a woman. Expectation of life is a slippery figure. Very easy to get wrong at the highest ages. At Vichy, the demographers were telling each other that their estimates of how many old there would be and how long they will live in countries like England and Wales are due from upwards.
Text B. Children's self-esteem. Self-esteem is what people think about themselves, whether or not they feel valued, and when family members have self-respect, pride, and belief in themselves, this high self-esteem makes it possible to cope with the everyday problems of growing up. Successful parenting begins by communicating to children that they belong and are loved for no other reason than just because they exist. Through touch and tone of voice, parents tell their infants whether or not they are valued, special, and loved. And it is these messages that form the basis of the child's self-esteem. When children grow up with love and are made to feel lovable despite their mistakes and failures, they are able to interact with others in a responsible, honest, and loving way. A healthy self-esteem is a resource for coping when difficulties arise, making it easier to see a problem as temporary, manageable, and something from which the individual can emerge. If, however, children grow up without love and without feelings of self-worth, they feel unlovable and worthless, and expect to be cheated, taken advantage of, and looked down upon by others. Ultimately, their actions invite this treatment, and their self-defeating behavior turns expectations into reality. They do not have the personal resources to handle everyday problems in a healthy way, and life may be viewed as just one crisis after another. Without a healthy self-esteem, they may cope by acting out problems, rather than talking them out, or by withdrawing and remaining indifferent toward themselves and others. These individuals grow up to live isolated, lonely lives, lacking the ability to give the love that they have never received. Self-esteem is a kind of energy, and when it is high, people feel like they can handle anything. It is what one feels when special things are happening, or everything is going great. A word of praise, a smile, a good grade on a report card, or doing something that creates pride within oneself can create this energy. When feelings about the self have been threatened and self-esteem is low, everything becomes more of an effort. It is difficult to hear, see, or think clearly. And others seem rude, inconsiderate, and rough. The problem is not with others, it is with the self. But often it is not until energies are back to normal that the real problem is recognized. Children need help understanding that their self-esteem and the self-esteem of those they interact with have a direct effect on each other. For example, a little girl comes home from school and says, "I need lovings, 'cause my feelings got hurt today." The mother responds to her child's need to be held and loved. If instead the mother said she was too busy to hold the little girl, the outcome would have been different. The infant's self-esteem is totally dependent on family members, and it is not until about the time the child enters school that outside forces contribute to feelings about the self. A child must also learn that a major resource for a healthy self-esteem comes from within. Some parents raise their children to depend on external rather than internal reinforcement through practices such as paying for good grades on report cards or exchanging special privileges for good behavior. The child learns to rely on others to maintain a high self-esteem and is not prepared to live in a world in which desirable behavior does not automatically produce a tangible reward, such as a smile, money, or special privileges. Maintaining a healthy self-esteem is a challenge that continues throughout life. One family found that they could help each other identify positive attitudes. One evening during an electric storm, the family gathered around the kitchen table, and each person wrote down two things that they liked about each family member. These pieces of paper were folded and given to the appropriate person, who one by one opened their special messages. The father later commented, "It was quite an experience, opening each little piece of paper and reading the message. I still have those gifts, and when I've had a really bad day, I read through them, and I always come away feeling better." The foundation of a healthy family depends on the ability of the parents to communicate messages of love, trust, and self-worth to each child. This is the basis on which self-esteem is built, and as the child grows, self-esteem changes from a collection of others' feelings to become personal feelings about the self. Ultimately, a person's self-esteem is reflected in the way he or she interacts with others.